This is Searching for America. I'm Robin Kerno. So it's bye-bye Bashar. And what does that mean for the incoming Trump administration? It's a lot to consider because things are changing by the hour, and this has been a pretty rapid fall from grace. As we know, in geopolitics, it's events, dear boy, events that change the options of leaders on the table. So how does Syria impact on the incoming Trump administration's plans? Well, I think the first thing is that Trump says, listen, don't get involved. Let this play out. Anybody who was on Twitter in the last few days would probably agree with him. You don't have to be an anti-interventionist or an isolationist to know that these events were unfolding and unraveling so fast it was best just to see what happens. This could keep on going. Why am I talking about the Trump administration when they're not even in power yet? It's because it seems like he is. It feels like it's baked in already. World leaders are already having one-on-one conversations with him. He has bypassed the State Department, turns up in Paris, as you saw, with those incredible images of him with Macron and Zelensky and Prince William at the opening of the Notre Dame Cathedral. He's ostensibly already involved in this sort of parallel diplomacy, parallel statecraft. Biden is, yes, traditionally at this time of a presidency, is a lame duck president. Trump says, don't get involved. But the Americans already are involved. They've been involved all along. Ever since ISIS, ever since the pushback against ISIS, the U.S. has had troops on the ground, intelligence on the ground, special forces on the ground. It depends whether it's a few hundred or more, but they're still there. They're still very much there on the ground. What kind of conversations have the Americans been having with these rebel groups as they have consolidated their power and pushed forward? It's going to be very interesting to see what the back channels around this were, because Mohammed al-Jalani, the leader, this rebel leader who has kind of been on his white horse charging forth towards Damascus and all of that, he's really had a rebranding, hasn't he? So how does he feel comfortable enough and strong enough and empowered enough to do what he's just done? It's certainly not on the sniffing of oil rag and sort of the sense that Assad was weak. Obviously, a few chips have fallen, particularly Iranian and Russian influence. We'll get to that in a moment. But it's so interesting to see how Jalani has rebranded himself from a terrorist, which he is technically designated with a $10 million bounty on his head. He's trying to sort of soften his image. It's very Machiavellian, isn't it? Very prince-like. He's trying to project an image of moderation, of being a, I mean, almost, if you heard his interview with my former CNN colleague, Jemana Karadze, it was brilliant on many levels, because you saw a man who ostensibly was saying, yes, I was young and foolish once. Yes, my instincts were Al-Qaeda, ISIS, but I promise you, I'm reformed, I'm matured. You know, we're not going to go full Taliban on Damascus. And he's keeping that messaging out there. I mean, talk about character arc development here. Jalani is trying to brand himself as sort of a policy wonk. Did you hear in that interview? It was so interesting. He was talking about institutions. He was talking about discipline. He was talking about coalition building type stuff. All the sort of wonky language that you hear at a Chatham House conversation about Millennium Development Goals on a wet Tuesday in London. He's not talking in that interview to Russia. He's not talking to Tehran. And so the question then is, have we seen a full retreat by Tehran and Moscow? Is this some sort of great and grand opportunity for Trump, for Turkey, for Israel in particular, to remodel the Middle East, to push back that ring of fire, to crush that Shia crescent, you know, and what kind of opportunities is that for Saudi Arabia and Sunni ambitions? All of that is on the table. And Americans, yes, are not going to be going full, you know, tanks across the desert. But there are people on the ground. You've got the support that has been given to the Kurds in that whole chunk of northeastern Syria. The Kurds now have a swath of land. It's, again, a chunk of the land around the Euphrates, very, very key strategic oil and gas refineries and locations. What is the decisions that are going to be made about Turkey? Because Turkey's not going to like all these Kurds moving forward or angling for some sort of greater role or greater demarcation. Turkey, of course, on the front foot, but Turkey has a nice direct red line to Moscow, also a NATO ally. What happens? Trump, yes, says don't get involved, but there are going to have to be some very strategic decisions made about what happens to Syria and the implications for the Middle East, and particularly for Israel, which is such a key ally of the US. And the Trump administration and Bibi Netanyahu certainly have a different way of assessing the implications and the post-October 7th reactions from Israel. All of that is going to be playing out and is going to land on Trump's desk, if not already in Mar-a-Lago. It's certainly going to be landing on his desk in the White House at the end of January. The big issue that everybody's grappling with, and there is no key, no real answer to, is what does this post-Assad Syria look like? You know, in many ways, it's a question about what is the post-Ottoman Empire situation look like? Is there going to be some sort of Neo-Sykes-Picot kind of divvying up? What are we going to see? A fragmentation, a balkanization of Syria? How much is it going to split? Is it going to be a soft fragmentation, like, say, a Libya situation? Or are we going to see a breakdown of these, of what is the country of Syria? I mean, these are very big questions to ask, and none of them have answers. The one really key issue when it also comes to the geopolitics at play right now is Russia and the port of Tartus. They have lost their only anchor in the Mediterranean. And it was Syria as a land, as an air, and as a naval corridor, gave the Russians and the Iranians the ability to get up to all sorts of mischief, using Syria as a pathway and as a bridge. And now with that no longer possibly an option. I mean, are the Russians negotiating with the rebels? Do you think they'll be able to hold on to some, create some sort of special deal with this port? Don't know. This would be a very important situation for President Trump to deal with as well, is locking Russia out of this key Mediterranean port and then making it difficult for them to set up shop somewhere else. I know Tobruk in Libya has been suggested as a possible alternative for the Russian naval forces. But just also bear in mind that, you know, this Syrian port that Russia has had access to, and whether it's Libya next or wherever it is, I mean, this is also about threats to NATO. This is about access to Africa. All of Wagner's refueling and all of that has come through this port in Tartus. There is going to be a serious amount of stuff to get involved with. This is not necessarily shock and awe stuff, but it is important geopolitical decisions that are going to have to be taken, and no doubt being taken right now by this incoming Trump administration. And how much of a conflict is there between the back end of this Biden administration and what the Trump administration is wanting to be done? The instincts are isolationists, the instincts are anti-interventionist, but the way this can remake the Middle East, potentially as a benefit to Israel, is an opportunity, no doubt, that the Trump administration would want. How far do they push it? How much do they utilize the sort of vacuum that we're seeing now? What are the conversations and the alignments taking place behind closed doors? Going to be so fascinating. Either way, Trump, yes, he says he doesn't want to get involved, but it doesn't work like that. It does not work like that. The Americans are, will, and have been involved in Syria and will continue to do so because it is so important in terms of what happens with Russia, what happens with Tehran, and the messaging it sends, of course, to China. 2025 is going to be fly by the seat of your pants kind of year, and this is just a taster. Thanks for listening. I'm Robin Kono, and you can get more at searchingforamericapod.com. That's searchingforamericapod.com.